Case is number 18-1347, Endotac LLC v. Cook Medical. Okay, Mr. Souter.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the Court. The issue before this Court is whether, based on the summary judgment record, there is a fact issue as to who was the first to conceive of a single-sleeve stent. Was it Dr. Lee on April 24, 1990, or Dr. Rhodes, the inventor of the patent suit before then? On page 29 and page 30 of Judge McKinney's summary judgment order, which is A52 and 53, Judge McKinney specifically cited to the summary judgment evidence of the three different potential conception dates. He cites the Dr. Silver's report and all the evidence submitted. He didn't just pay lip service to it. He cited different portions of his evidence at different times on page 29 and 30. He also cites on page 4 of his opinion the very specific reference in Dr. Silver's report, paragraph 40, that dealt with the draft patent application.
Weren't these arguments waived? Did you waive these arguments?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Where in your opposition to their summary judgment motion did you explicitly argue for these late March, early April dates?
On page 23 of our motion, which is A40-21, we say, see Exhibit B.
I'm sorry, which page?
It is A4021.
And which volume is that in?
I apologize, I do not know, Your Honor. And again, Your Honor, there were two patents.
Wait, sorry.
Okay.
All
right. This is
where,
your response,
please.
Yes.
Right. Where does it say that?
Halfway down, right before subsection B, Lee alleged prior invention, we say Exhibit B at 32 to 35, Exhibit B at 35 to 43.
You raised it just by citing those portions of the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Given the number of issues that were raised in their summary judgment motion. Two patents, infringement.
Okay, let's suppose we find that that's inadequate to preserve the issue. Is there anything else?
Yes, Your Honor.
Wait, where you preserve the issue as to the March-April time period?
Yes.
And let me just note, that sentence doesn't say anything about the March-April date. It's talking about a December 5th, 1989 date, which is a date you clearly raised, but the district court found at that point there was no showing that all of the elements of the claim had been conceived. So I don't understand how you can argue by using a sentence that references an entirely different conception date and citing the expert reports the late March, early April date, which isn't even mentioned in this sentence.
Your Honor, my response is that Judge McKinney had no problem considering that evidence. He, on page 4 of his opinion, which is Appendix 27, he cites to the very specific reference of the March-April date. He discusses it in his factual finding.
He held that the issue wasn't properly preserved, right?
No.
Part of the new judge who replaced him held that.
Your Honor, on a motion for reconsideration, which is a completely different standard, he also said that if the court had considered that evidence, it would result in a different finding in his view. And the Judge McKinney...
No. You're not answering my question. On the rehearing, on the reconsideration, the district judge said this issue was not properly preserved, right?
Yes. Well, but he ruled on it on the merits anyway, and we cite the cases that that is sufficient to preserve appellate issue, that if it's raised in a motion for reconsideration and cited on the merits by the judge.
Where does he decide it on the merits?
He says in the statement, on page 5 of our reply brief.
Now give us the record reference where he ruled on this.
It is A7161.
7161?
Yes. He says, and this is cited on page 5 of our gray brief, frankly, it looks to me that if the court looked at those paragraphs when deciding the motion, it would appear to support a different argument than the one that conception date was sometime before April 24th. The fact of the matter is,
I don't think that's the same thing as deciding the issue.
Particularly since he goes on and says that argument wasn't presented, that I can see either in the reply brief or the server reply.
But, Your Honor, we submit that Judge McKinney, the original judge who unfortunately passed away, specifically, if you look at page 29 and 30 of his opinion, he cites to the very evidence.
Where? Show us where that is. What pages of the record is that at?
It is it's appendix 52 and appendix 53. The opinion is attached to our blue brief.
Where does he decide the issue?
He cites to it on the bottom of page 29, A52, citing inter alia docket number 179.
This is the same argument you pointed to us in your brief. He's talking about the December 5th date. He's saying the December 5th date, which you clearly raised, is not good enough. And you're trying to say by citing all these additional pages that that preserves it. But it doesn't say anything about specifically that late March, early April date, does it?
No, not there, Your Honor. On page 4 of his opinion, which is appendix 27, look at the top, the first paragraph.
Yeah, but that doesn't resolve the issue. It just describes the facts.
Yes, Your Honor.
That doesn't show anywhere where you argued that those are sufficient to raise it.
Your Honor, citing the Cygnus case out of this court.
You don't have, let me just back up. You do not have a section in your summary judgment opposition that says the conception date was late March, early April, do you?
We do not say that. We do not say that specific thing. But, Your Honor,
the only way you can get there is to bootstrap broad citations to an expert report that you were using to argue in favor of the December 89 date.
No, this is not. No, Your Honor, I disagree with that. These were not broad citations. Given the numerous issues that were raised in the summary judgment and our limited time to address two patents, invalidity, infringement, no willfulness, latches, enablement, written description, we had to give a concise roadmap to the court to say, here is where the evidence is. Your opinion in Cygnus says if the summary judgment record shows that it's cited in the brief or the summary judgment record, not the appellate record, but the summary judgment record, that is sufficient. We cite those cases, and we said, Judge, look here. We didn't say see the evidence, see Dr. Silver's report. We said look at these specific paragraphs, and Judge McKinney did. And in fact, Your Honor, in their reply brief on page 6, which is appellate record 6917, appellees had no problem addressing the other two alternative dates on page 6 in the text and in a footnote. So it was consented to and addressed by the other side. They didn't say we waived it in their reply brief. The judge weighed the evidence and discussed it, and it's our position that is squarely before Your Honors today. That is not a waiver. This is not like the cases they cited.
I can see how perhaps citations to the record may, in certain situations, result in preserving a particular issue. But when we're talking about conception dates, we're talking about specific periods in time. And I don't see that there's room in that type of situation for guesswork. I mean, the attorney has to argue on the basis of the record those specific dates, and that's what seems to be missing here.
Your Honor?
You're citing us to portions of the record, but just citing to the record or a citation by itself doesn't add up or doesn't complete attorney argument. It doesn't preserve the issue.
If you look at the pages that we, the specific paragraphs, we didn't just say, see Dr. Silvers. We said,
right.
Look at this
but you
paragraph.
Don't, you're not pointing to any part of the record where you have advanced a specific argument. As you talk about a roadmap, there's no exit to that roadmap that says that has these specific dates.
Your Honor, we believe it does. Paragraphs 42, 43, and 44, which are cited three different times by Judge McKinney, says, based on this evidence, I find December 5th. If you add this additional evidence that he discusses and the citation to that, I find this alternative date. And then if you add this further evidence, I find this date. And we put all three in there, right there. And Judge McKinney saw them. He addressed paragraphs 42, 43, and 44 by specific reference in his opinion. Clearly, the inference is he considered that.
Inference. That's the problem.
Is there a sentence in his opinion that says, you all have asserted late March, early April as a conception date. I reject that.
No. He does not say that. He gives
a
specific.
There is a sentence that says, you asserted December 5th as a date, and I reject that, right?
Yes.
So he clearly was aware of the December 5th allegation, which is, I might be wrong, but whenever you're citing us to this evidence, it's always in the context of that December 5th sentence.
But, Your Honor, his support for that sentence, he should have just said paragraph 42. He then goes to paragraph 43 on page, and then he goes to paragraph 44.
So you're asking us to infer he addressed an argument that you didn't explicitly make, and he didn't explicitly rule against you by reading in a record citation that relates to that argument instead of the December 5th date.
Yes, Your Honor, because if you look at the totality of the circumstances and his well-reasoned opinion on
the
facts.
But the issue is not whether the judge waived the argument. It's whether the attorney waived the argument.
Yes, and under the Cygnus case, Your Honor, we submit that we directed the court to the summary judgment record that we submitted at the time. And if I may, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Zanfordino.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I want to get to the question that you all were raising about the summary judgment opposition brief. And one of the important things to recognize, as I think you all pointed out, is that nowhere in that brief is there any discussion of any date besides Dr. Rhodes' December 5th, 1989 preliminary drawings. So one of the things that the local rules require, and we have that in our appendix at A7173, and I think this was part of what the judge was looking at, Judge Miller, after Judge McKinney passed away, was whether or not the argument had been waived. And what local rule 56.1 in the summary judgment procedure part of the Southern District of Indiana rule says is that a party opposing a summary judgment motion must file a response within so many days. And here's the important part. The response must include a section labeled Statement of Material Facts that identifies the potentially determinative facts and factual disputes that the party contends demonstrate a dispute of fact precluding summary judgment. So the response, so our motion for summary judgment had a section devoted to a statement of material facts not in dispute, and they were numbered, and that's part of the record. And Endotach responded to those statement of facts. And nowhere in those statement of material facts do they point to anything other than December 5th of 1989.
So I think your friend's argument is we're citing the expert report regarding the late March, early April activity in our briefs and papers, and the district court sees that and understands that. And why else would we be citing that evidence if it weren't to establish that as a conception date? Is there any reason to cite that evidence except as a conception date?
Well, that's what they thought was Dr. Rhodes' conception date, December 5th of 1989.
No, I mean...
Oh, I'm sorry.
They also cited the late March, early April evidence.
Not in their brief or not in their response to the statement of material facts. Where you see that is in a declaration by an expert that was submitted.
Weren't they citing that paragraph of the declaration relating to those dates? I'm not trying to trick you here. It seems to me that if you're trying to establish December 5th as a date, you not only have to show that it was conceived on December 5th, you have to show you diligently reduced it to practice throughout the period. So the other more likely explanation for citation of that record evidence is to show that he was diligently pursuing, but not to set it up as a separate independent conception date.
I understand your question, though, and that's correct. If you look at the way this thing was argued before the district court, it's, look, we have everything in this December 5th, 1989 document. Now, because we are, you know, we had established a prima facie case of invalidity by the fact that Dr. Lee filed a patent on April 27th of 1990, so he was ahead of Dr. Rhodes' patent by 4 months, that put the burden on them to come forward with evidence that they had an earlier conception date. And when you look at what they were arguing, they were essentially saying, look, this thing is established as of December 5th, 1989. Now, that's not enough because our application got filed later. And so everything after that is, and we, besides, we were diligent all the way through August 15th of 1990 when Dr. Rhodes filed his patent. So it comes off as an argument of, I've got it by December 5th, and I was just diligent all the way through August 15th of 1990, so therefore I can get ahead of the date that Dr. Lee had established at a minimum on April 27th of 1990 when he filed his patent application, which Endotach admits that the Lee patent and the Lee patent application has everything that's in the asserted claims.
Where do we find in the record the paragraph of the expert declaration that they cited and that we've been talking about? In the district court, they've shown us a sentence which cited some paragraphs from an expert affidavit. Which of those paragraphs, or where do we find those paragraphs in the record?
Oh, I see. Okay, so I can point you to those. Are you asking where we can find those documents or where we can...
I just want to look at the paragraphs of the expert affidavit or declaration that they cited.
Got it. I understand. Okay. I will find that. So his declaration is at A5651 to 70. And then I will have to point you to the exact page. If you look, let's start at, for example, 5658 of the appendix. That's a part of a document. I can take you back to APPX 5651 just so you can see that 5651 is the declaration of their expert, Dr. James Silver.
Yeah, which paragraphs did they cite in their summary judgment opposition?
So they cite, well, they. I'm going to give you the range. I'll have to go back and look. They started.
Let's make this less confusing. Where again do we find the reference in their brief? What page is that at?
Okay, in their brief?
Not the brief here, but their brief
below.
This, below, yeah.
Correct. So their summary judgment opposition brief starts at A4050, and then you go forward to A4082, 83, and 84. So those.
Yeah, but there's a particular sentence where, which we were looking at before.
I think your friend pointed us to 4082 in the middle of the page.
Right.
Talks about he's conceived of the claim at least as early as December 5th, 1989, and was diligent throughout constructive reduction of practice in August 10th, 1990.
Right, and the citations below that are where they're contending that they cited to Dr. Silver's declaration where he was making an argument about what had happened.
Well, what they did is they cited here to a range of pages which included a lot of different arguments, one of which related to the December date.
To the December claim,
they
right.
They didn't specifically identify the paragraph that talked about March, April.
No, they did not.
Yeah.
No, because that was never something that they ever put in their briefs below. That was what. So they had filed a motion for reconsideration. After Judge McKinney passed away, Judge Miller took the case over. They had filed a motion for reconsideration, and Judge Miller said, look, I don't see this argument in the summary judgment briefing.
Yeah, I understand.
And they...
At least that range of paragraphs they cited, it seems to include an October 89 date around the birth of his child, a December 5th, 89 date, a January 90 date. It's a range of dates.
Yep, absolutely. It's a range of dates, and it's just sort of a sort of mishmash of events that occurred. And our point is, what they were required to do to antedate our proof to show that they had an earlier conception was not just sort of, for lack of a better term, back up the truck and say, hey, here's our conception documents. But say, all right, here's our 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 conception documents. And I'm going to take you to an expert or an inventor, either way. In this case, the inventor had passed away, so he couldn't testify. So they used their expert as a surrogate. And even the expert needed to come forward and say, all right, look, here's a document that I think is a conception document. Or a series of conception documents, right? It could be 2, 3, 4, whatever the case may be. And be able to say in a declaration, all right, look, here are the claim limitations, A, B, C, D, and E. And here's where I find those claim limitations in the invention disclosure or in the conception documents. They never did that. They've never tried to do that with any of this. Our response in our summary judgment reply was, okay, look, you haven't argued anything other December 5th of 1989?
Let me ask you this. How much do you actually have to do to avoid summary judgment? Your statement of material fact here is that you conceived it as at least April 24th, and I think that's right, that's the key date we're relying on here. If they're disputing that, can't they just come in and say, we conceived of it before April 24th, and here's the document that shows any possible number of prior conception dates? Why doesn't that create a genuine issue of material fact as to the April 24th date?
Well, I think once we established a prima facie case of invalidity, then they had the burden of production, right, to come forward and show that there was something that they had beforehand.
No, I understand that, but this went off on summary judgment, right?
Right, this is on summary judgment.
So I'm just a little curious as to how much they had to do to rebut that date. Certainly you, when you put forth an affidavit or whatever you did for that April 24th, that's enough to be a credible allegation of material fact. It's their responsibility then to provide some evidence to rebut that would send it to a jury. why isn't coming in and saying, we invented it before April 24th CDS report enough to do that?
Well, in our brief, we cite the Cordon's case as an example of what one has to do to meet the burden of production. And I have to tell you in advance, it's a JMOL case. We incorrectly called it a summary judgment case. I apologize for that. I should have caught that before we filed our brief. I caught that this weekend. So I can submit a corrected brief if that's necessary. But it's not a summary judgment case. But the Cordon's case lays out in the context of a burden of production what at least we say one needs to do. And this court found that the Cordon's case found that the district court did not err in finding on JMOL, which the standard is the same as summary judgment, that the other side, the plaintiff, had not proven a conception date that was earlier.
What it said is you've got to have linking argument.
And correct.
You got to link your conclusion to the evidence in the record. And the real problem here, even if one gets past the waiver issue, that the expert affidavit is conclusory and doesn't do that linking even with respect to the March-April date.
And that's what we responded to in our reply brief. We weren't responding to the argument, okay, you've made the argument, because look, I mean, even though they never made that argument in their brief as required by the rules and as Judge Miller found on reconsideration, and they've never argued that Judge Miller abused his discretion in finding that they hadn't argued that in their summary judgment motion, but we saw, I mean, look, we're going through the entire record, everything that they're citing, and we're seeing these sections of this Silver Declaration, and we're seeing him say, okay, look, there's these documents that I see, and in my opinion, they prove conception. Conception of what? Conception of, well, we think the Cordon's case stands for the proposition that when you're facing a burden of production in response to a prima facie case of invalidity, you've got to do more than just have someone say, it's just all there, trust me. You've got to put something together. You've got to show where those conception documents establish a link between what are in those documents and what are in the asserted claims. Now, they've never done that. I mean, their expert at one point said, oh, yeah, I got a claim chart. I think he called the B6. They'll just show you all this. They never submitted that chart to the court.
So you're arguing that in their summary judgment motion, they did not set up and make an argument as to the alternative conception dates. That's your argument.
I see I'm out of time. That's our argument, essentially.
Why then did you respond to that argument in your response?
Well, if
they're not making the argument, why are you responding to it? And your response alone, shouldn't that weigh in our consideration of whether there's waiver or not?
Well, our response wasn't to the merits of it at all. Our response was just, look, okay, we see what you're arguing, December 5th of 1989.
Where's your response to this?
Pardon me?
Where in the record is your response?
Oh, so that's, I think I have that one. It's 6916. Yeah, so 6915 and 6916, right? So we're looking at the citations now, okay? And if you look at there's a footnote. I mean, we have it as a footnote 6 on 6916. We say Dr. Silver alternatively seeks to establish conception by Dr. Rhodes as of late March or early April of 1990. And then we point out how, well, now that's just he's trying to string along a series of dates that somehow go from December 5th of 1989 to April 24th or March or April of 1990 and try and create a range maybe of when the conception happened. But at the end we say, I mean, the part is further, such unsupported conclusory evidence is insufficient to establish a genuine issue of material fact in a situation where they admit they carry the burden of production.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Zanfordino.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Souter?
Yes, Your Honors. Dr. Silver, at paragraphs 35 to 43 of his application, of his declaration, which is pages 5659 to 5663, go through in very detailed fashion the evidence that he considered, the drawings, the testimony, everything. He lays it out in paragraph 43. He says, the several draft sketches which were marked up of drafts of the patent application, the audio recording of Dr. Rose dictating the first draft patent application with the sites, in conjunction with the corroborating evidence of Mrs. Rose and Mr. Dugan, confirmed that Dr. Rose had conceived of each and every step of the limitations as late as late March or early April.
Yeah, but that's a problem under the Cordon's case, because it's not being specific as to where each limitation is found.
That's not the requirement. Cordon's dealt with the issue of the inventor trying to testify as to his own corroboration of his conception. And this court has held in the Centricut case.
Now, the case also said you've got to link the expert's conclusion to the particular claim limitations and where the evidence supports conception of those particular limitations. And that this doesn't do that.
Absolutely. Your Honor, in complex technology, I would agree with you. I cite the Centricut case, the Union Carbide case. If it's the technology is readily understandable, you don't even need expert testimony.
Well, I don't think that these claims are so simple. I mean, they are pretty complicated, and it's a lot to ask a district court or this court to figure out where the limitations are found in the record without an expert roadmap.
Your Honor, I submit this is simple. It's a graft, a stent on the outside of the periphery. But the other point, Your Honor, is Judge McKinney on the same page of his opinion rejected our April 24th conception date. On page A53, before he discusses December 5th date, he says the April 24th date as to conception is of no avail because it's the same date, so we lose the tie. He considered that date. So if he considered anything other than December 5th, it's because he considered these other arguments. He considered them. He ruled upon them. He weighed the evidence. So how can that be a waiver?
I don't understand how that's true. He specifically addressed the December 5th date. He specifically addressed the April 24th date. He did not specifically address any other of the dates propounded by Dr. Silver's affidavit.
But Your Honor, if he addressed the April 24th date as conception, then he considered Dr. Silver's paragraph 44, which says December, late March, or April 24th. So he considered 1 and 3 in his opinion.
How do we know he considered 2 if you didn't argue it to him?
Because he cites to paragraphs 42 to 44, and he addresses 42, he addresses 44, and earlier in his opinion, he discusses 43. So the clear implication is that he carefully considered all of the evidence. Your Honor, they addressed it. They told Judge McKinney the alternative dates are there in their reply brief, and the judge addressed it.
Okay. Your Honor, Mr. Souter, I think we're out of time. Thank you.
Your Honor, last thing, there's a
procedure. No.
Sorry,
you have to stop.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.